As I was thinking about tonight's presentation, one thing I realized is that there's a phrase from a book. It's a collection of writings that are commonly called, collectively, the Tai Chi classics. So it's the classic literature about Tai Chi. And one phrase that always sticks in my mind is the one on the left: be still as a mountain, move like a great river. So this is essentially an instruction manual about Tai Chi. So that's telling you what to do when you're practicing Tai Chi. One of the reasons that that particular phrase sticks in my mind is that one of my earlier teachers who did a translation of the Tai Chi classics, that's what's on the back of the book. So every time I picked up this book and looked at the back cover, I saw that phrase. The second one, which is from Yang Chenfu, who is a major person in Yang family style Tai Chi, and from his 10 important points about Tai Chi, he says, seek stillness in movement. So one of the things with these phrases is that is a little bit of a paradox. How do you move and be still? How do you be still and move? So we'll explore that a little bit tonight. But the main purpose for tonight is really looking at some of the reasons why practicing Tai Chi can be a complementary practice and help enhance your meditation practice. There are some important things in the way Tai Chi works that can help set up the conditions for more successful meditation. So to kind of get started, just take a moment to explain what is Tai Chi. Most people have some idea of what it might be. Some of you, I know here, have practiced Tai Chi a little bit, if not more. But getting down to the basics, in the Chinese term Tai Chi is into English usually translated as supreme ultimate, which really doesn't give you a lot of information. When I was writing this slide, it made me think of a particular presidential candidate who might describe himself as that every chance that he gets. But what it really has to do with is, which is symbolized by this symbol here, it's the place where yin and yang arise and are undifferentiated. So essentially, it's a place where there's no distinction between things that we would normally consider opposites. So it's the kind of place from where those things arise. So that sounds a little esoteric, but that happens here sometimes. But it's a very important concept, and many things in Taoism and in Chinese culture in general are based on this idea that nothing happens until things split into yin and yang, and once they do that, everything has both yin and yang in it all the time. And I'm going to do this very quickly. I do this every now and then because there's a lot of confusion with Chinese language and how this works into English. So I apologize if this is a little bit too fast. You can ask me questions about it later. So what is Tai Chi? Tai Chi. And it's actually pronounced more like this right hand version, Tai Chi. There are different systems for transliterating Chinese into English. This one's called the Wade-Giles system. This is the pinyin, which is commonly used in mainland China today. Unfortunately, neither of them is really very good at letting us know how to actually say it, looking at Western characters. There was a system called the Yale system, which is not used very much, which is probably the one that does that the best, but it's not used very often. So the more complete name for Tai Chi is Tai Chi Chuan, and Chuan means boxing or fist, more literally. So Tai Chi Chuan is a combination of Tai Chi philosophy and martial arts. So Tai Chi equals martial arts movements plus internal power generation. And yin yang is something that's used in that field of Nei Jing, which is the Chinese word for internal power. And then a couple other phrases, Nei Gong and Qi Gong are used to describe methods for developing internal power or energy. So Tai Chi is a form of Qigong or a form of Neigong, but not all forms of Neigong and Qigong are Tai Chi, if that makes sense. One really big one that I like to point out is that the CHI word in Taiji is not the same word as the CHI word in Qigong, even though they are written the same in these transliterations. They are different words. So Qi, often spelled as QI, has to do with the internal energy in your body, or more importantly, the energy that runs your physical body. The other word, as I mentioned before, is that supreme ultimate. So it is a different character in Chinese, if you look at the original Chinese. I do also like to mention Gong Fu, because that comes up a lot, which is really mean, it's often used for martial arts, but it really means any practice that requires some work to figure it out and to get it to work for you. A common term in China is wushu for martial arts also, okay. Again, different ways of writing all these terms. So this word here, gong and gong fu, those are the same words as well. Okay, so I'm gonna move on from that. If you have any questions, we can look at that later on. But there is a lot of confusion with that, so I do like to mention that now and then. Okay, then the trickier question, what is meditation? Anybody have any ideas? This is really an unanswerable question because it means a lot of different things in different traditions. There's lots of different ways of thinking about it. So as I was preparing for this talk, I was trying to think what's a really nice, succinct way of explaining this. And I came across John's book, who introduced me this evening, called The Meditative Path. And he has these nice three aspects of meditation: awareness, concentration, and serenity. And I thought that's a really good kind of place to start talking about what is meditation, because those are very important aspects that need to be there for it really to be meditation. The other thing I thought about was this issue here of meditation versus meditative. In the West, people tend to call something meditation regardless of what it is. And we'll talk more about that in terms of Tai Chi. But there's a real clear distinction between a practice that's actually meditation. Usually those are things that come from traditions that have been around in the world for a long time, things like Buddhism and Taoism, Christianity even, and some other things. And meditative, which is putting you in a good state for meditation, but it does not necessarily mean that you're doing meditation at that point. So that's something I think about a lot. Is something actually meditation, or is it purely meditative? So most Tai Chi in the world is not practiced as meditation, but it is a meditative movement system. If you practice Tai Chi well, you will get into a more meditative state in your life. Now, there's a lot of books and things written about Tai Chi where they use the term Tai Chi is moving meditation, which is kind of a misnomer most of the time. Not always, but most of the time. And that comes from Dong Jing, which is the Chinese words for to move and to be still combined together. So you'll see that written in Tai Chi books, for example, a lot. In my teacher's book, Tai Chi Health for Life, he mentions these three characteristics about practicing meditative Tai Chi, which I think actually line up pretty nicely with John's three characteristics there too. So relaxed focus, quiet down your internal conversations. We all have, in Chinese they call it the monkey mind, where your mind is constantly talking at you and jumping from one thought to the next. So a prerequisite for true meditation is to quiet those internal voices or internal conversations. And then the movements of Tai Chi are practiced in slow motion with a deep sense of relaxation. And by doing Tai Chi, you can certainly begin to work on these three aspects of meditation. Okay, well, you thought you were gonna get off easy tonight, but I always like to take every moment I can as a teaching opportunity. So you're gonna learn a couple of Tai Chi meditation exercises this evening. Don't worry, they're very relatively easy. They're not like my Tai Chi classes. I see some of my students looking, oh no, what are we going to do? So I actually took those three aspects of meditation, awareness, concentration, and serenity, and found some practices that kind of fit into that pretty well. So we'll talk about them as we get to them. But the first one is, for awareness, thumb circles. I'm actually gonna pull the chair over just to make this easier. Try not to sit in front of the, am I not in front of the projector?
No.
Yeah, okay. So most of you probably know how to twiddle your thumbs. You know, this sort of thing. I might do something up here, but feel free to have your hands on your lap as you're doing this. So the Tai Chi version of doing this, though, is that you want to essentially do the same motion, but much slower than you might normally do if you're just bored and trying to move. So the first thing is to have your thumbs circle each other relatively slowly. But don't go too slow, because you might lose your awareness, which is what we're focusing on. If you get bored, you can always go the opposite direction. It doesn't really matter which one. So if east doesn't work, go west. So the first thing to pay attention to is, are you actually making circles with your thumbs? Or do you notice spots along the way where there's an impediment to the circular movement in your thumb? So maybe when one of your thumbs is at the low point, it's a little bit harder for it to move through that spot. So really put all of your mind in just into your thumbs and see if you can notice, are they actually moving in a circle? So I will say this is, you know, ultimately this is something that can take years and years of practice to work on, because when you think you've got it, there's always one other spot that maybe that one's not quite right, but at least you can start somewhere. Now the other thing you can do eventually, once you do this for a little while, is you might start noticing farther up your arm, because your thumb is not just floating in space by itself, it's actually connected to other things in your forearm. So as you're doing these circles, notice the movement of bones, muscles, whatever in your forearm, and see if that is the thing that maybe is not allowing your circles to be smooth and circular. And we're only going to go that far tonight, but eventually you can use this very simple exercise to go all the way up your arm, into your torso, up to the top of your head, and down to the bottom of your feet. Because everything in your body is connected. You only have one body. At least most of you only have one body. So this is a real good basic practice. You can do this pretty much anywhere. Don't do it while you're driving. But if you're waiting in line, waiting for an appointment, bored at work, need to calm down a little bit. One of the characteristics of circular movements is that your nervous system gets the message that it can calm down and operate more smoothly. If your mind and your body are always jumping around and agitated and angry and whatever, doing this movement, even for a few minutes, can really just help smooth things out. But you do have to maintain some awareness while you're doing it, not just move the fingers around. Okay. Feel free to continue doing this, but I'm going to get up and continue talking about some other stuff. Okay. I get the nicest chair, obviously, here tonight. So. One thing I'll mention is that every movement in Tai Chi is circular. There is no movement in Tai Chi that is linear. If you come across someone doing Tai Chi and they do linear movements, it is not Tai Chi. It has to be circular in order for it to work. In fact, the Taoists are all about circles. The Tai Chi symbol is a circle or a sphere. You know, the cycle of being born to death and whatever else is a circle. Everything is a circle. Okay. So as I mentioned, doing those thumb circles is really useful for your nervous system. So these are some things that practicing Tai Chi can help with to set that foundation for a meditation practice. So reducing stress is very important. We all have a lot of stress in our lives. So having the nervous system operate more smoothly without spikes, very important. Having some better mental agility to be able to focus on whatever things arise while you're meditating is very, very important. Again, really, you know, in any version of meditation or from whatever tradition. Tai Chi helps you develop a strong center and foster whole body awareness. So even in this thumb exercise, I talked about feeling inside your body, paying attention to things that are happening inside. That's essentially one of the major things that happens in most meditation traditions, is you're trying to go deep inside your mind or consciousness to find what's there. There's a saying that, you know, I believe it was my teacher was asking his teacher, you know, why don't so many people practice meditation? And one of the answers is, you know, you might start finding things out about yourself that you don't like as you go deeper inside. So it can be a challenge to do that. But having that inside be a little bit more, a little stronger, and having more awareness of what it actually is might make it easier to pick out those things that are useful or not useful that you can work on or ignore, depending on what you need to do. This, of course, is very good for your health as well. We'll do a practice later for this one, sinking your chi to sink your mind. One of the things that is very important, actually we'll talk more about that on the next slide, but we spend a lot of time in the West up in this part of our head. You know, a lot of our information is visual. Most of our jobs nowadays involve thought rather than just going out and plowing the fields and all that kind of stuff. So this ability to take all the energy that is up in your mind and sink it down through your body to help develop your awareness is very important. And Tai Chi is very good at doing that. And usually when people talk about Tai Chi, relaxation is one of the first things that comes up. So developing a relaxed body and mind, of course, is something that Tai Chi works on very well. So Tai Chi can provide many health benefits for meditators. I'm not going to go into the litany of all of the health benefits of Tai Chi. My teacher wrote basically an entire book called Tai Chi Health for Life, which is essentially why Tai Chi is useful. But in terms of meditation, a couple of very specific things. And we started talking about this one in terms of sinking the mind. But many meditation traditions are essentially intellectual practices. So using the mind, and I'm speaking of the mind in the intellect in a very broad sense here. But what can happen is that as you're doing your practice, sometimes you can run into the situation where there's energies that you're not able to process or get balanced. Taoism is all about balance, so that's one of the reasons why this shows up here. If you have a sedentary lifestyle and don't move a lot, that can create a lot of stress as well. If your body is not able to handle all of the energy of various types that might come up while you're meditating. And this last one I actually talk a lot about when I teach, that the brain can actually suck excessive energy out of the body. And the phrase in Chinese is a little more vivid, which is your brain can eat your body. So if you talk about the brain, it's one of the things in our body that actually takes an immense amount of energy. And it can be a drain on one system. If you're familiar with Chinese medicine, the kidneys are associated with the vitality of your body. But they're also highly responsible for powering your brain. So if you generally have a low level of vitality and you're using your brain constantly, the brain's going to just pull energy from wherever it can in your body. So having some practice to help balance that out, get stuck energy out of your brain, can be really important, especially as you go into meditation, which can tend to rev up energies that are happening in your brain or occurring in your brain. Now that I've said all of that, I do want to mention that This is something that research has shown, that there are a lot of studies on meditation that talk about the benefits of meditation for the brain. So, and that's all true, but I think that if you partake of the benefits of meditation on the brain, you also have to have the rest of the energy in your system balanced to be able to maintain that. So from the Harvard Medical School Guide to Tai Chi, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just to mention a couple things. This has to do with mind-body research showing the neurophysiological basis of meditation. So meditation may enhance multiple dimensions of cognitive function. So that's a useful one. Meditation can change memory-related brain activity and structure. Who would like a better memory rather than worse memory? That's an easy one. Meditation enhances the ability to focus, important for meditation too, so kind of works both ways, and alters brain networks that enhance cognitive skills. It also changes areas of the brain related to awareness, and which include things like focus, sensory processing, and awareness of sensory experiences. So even though the brain can be a problem in terms of the amount of energy it can drain from your system, if you're not aware of that, meditation itself can be very beneficial for your brain, as well as Tai Chi. This is a chart from also from the Harvard Medical School Guide to Tai Chi. I just put this up here because it was a kind of a nice succinct thing that showed a lot of different aspects of Tai Chi that are very useful. So things like awareness, which we've talked about, intention, dynamic structural integration, so your body works better, relaxation of the body and mind, exercise, better breathing, social interaction, if you go to a class, that type of thing. You know, meditation can often be a solitary experience unless you're in a meditation group. And some type of embodied spirituality, so rather than just thinking about spirituality, actually embodying it into your system. So I just thought that was a nice chart that kind of talks about a lot of information that I now don't have to go into because it's a large area to talk about. And it was a nice looking diagram, so. Oh look, we're at number two. Circular breathing and counting breaths for concentration. So the two main things here, we've already talked about things that are circular. So in terms of breathing, what circularity has to do with is that there is no gap between your inhale and your exhale. So you never hold the breath. Now this is specifically a Taoist breathing practice. There are lots of breathing practices in the world that do different things. You might breathe in for X number of counts, hold your breath for a bit, and then breathe out. And those all have different purposes. But in terms of that same thing we just talked about of getting your nervous system to be smooth and balanced, this is the type of breathing that works best for that. And then the second part of that, counting breaths, is a really good method for concentration. It's very easy as you start trying to focus on something for the mind to space out at some point along the way. And that's the opposite of what you want to do in meditation. Really, in meditation, you want kind of a continuous, unbroken awareness through the whole process. So having some method for helping your system do that can be very useful. I'm going to grab the chair again here. So the really quick lesson in Taoist breathing is that you're going to inhale and take one hand and put it on your belly, and take your other hand and put it on your chest. And as you inhale, preferably through your nose, and exhale through your nose if you can, as you inhale, your belly is going to expand like a balloon. And as you exhale, your belly is going to go back. Again, there are different breathing methods in the world. You might not be used to doing this one. But this is the way normally you would breathe doing Tai Chi or Qigong and at least Taoist meditation. And then the hand on the chest is to make you aware that your chest is not puffing out as you inhale. And again, if you're not used to that, that might be a little bit tricky, but do your best for now. So the first thing is just to have that basic movement of the breath. The second thing is to pay a little bit more attention to the point where you're finishing your exhale and going to the inhale, and getting that to be as smooth and continuous as possible. Again, one of those things that's easier said than done. And the same thing at the other end, after you're done inhaling, before you do the exhale, can you get that to be continuous and smooth? So the more you can do that, it's the same effect as doing the thumb circles or any kind of circular movement. Your nervous system is going to get the message that it can also be smooth. And then once you have that going, just close your eyes for a moment. And we're just going to take 10 breaths. And just to yourself, count your breaths. If you need to, you can, you know, touch a finger for each breath, if that helps. But see if you can take 10 inhale and exhale combinations without your mind wandering or going away. Again, one of those things that's easier said than done. But if you really want to develop the ability to become more aware of what's happening inside your system, inside your body, inside your mind, inside your emotions, whatever it is, this is a really useful practice for that. You can move your hands away if you feel like your breathing is working well. And I'm just talking to distract you, so maybe it'll make you more aware of counting your breaths. So the way to practice this, if you want to practice it for longer, is do sets of 10. So do 10 breaths, do another 10 breaths, do another 10 breaths. Then when that's comfortable, you can always increase the number to what you can do. So there's no reason to say, I'm going to do 100 breaths, and then you lose it somewhere around 37. Better to do little groups of 10, because 10's an easy one, or something like that. So this seems like a kind of simple trick, but it really is very useful. It's a very simple practice that has really profound implications for developing that ability to focus in an unbroken way while you're either doing Tai Chi or meditating, or both, which we'll talk more about. The breathing, the Taoist breathing that I practice and teach is a much more involved system than just what we did tonight, but that's a good place to start. And even if you're not going to do meditation, having better concentration in one's life is a useful thing too. So it might be useful for that as well. Okay, that's 2 out of 3, so not too bad. Okay, where are we going next? Great. So up to this point, I've mainly just been talking about general issues with Tai Chi, or aspects of Tai Chi that are helpful for any kind of meditation. For the rest of the time, I'm going to switch a little bit more specifically into the Taoist water method of meditation. This is a version of Taoism that isn't as well known in the West. The vast majority of translations of Taoist books in the West are from what would be called Neo-Taoism, or the fire method school. So if you think of the nature of fire versus water, fire tends to move upwards, it consumes everything in its path. It's a little more yang. And that was heavily influenced by Buddhism's movement into China. I don't know the exact year, but around 500 AD or so, or CE, I guess is the right term for that now. But earlier than that, the water method was the original form of Taoism. It's usually known primarily from Lao Tzu, considered to be the author of the Tao Te Ching. That's him riding his ox out of China. The story is that he got fed up with the world, picked up an ox at Hertz Rent-A-Ox, headed towards the border. But when he got to the border, one of his students who was a guard there said, "Before you leave, can you write down your wisdom for us?" And he apparently wrote down. Although, as scholars have sorted out, other people have contributed their wisdom to that work as well. And that was done during what's called the Warring States period, which is similar to our current era, if you think about it. Which was about 500 BCE. But this is a tradition that existed for at least 1,000 years, if not longer, before that was written down. So it's a very ancient tradition, it's been around for a long time. So as I was preparing for this and thinking of John's three characteristics of meditation, awareness, concentration, and serenity, I was looking at my teacher's meditation books and realized the titles of them kind of fit into those categories pretty well. The first one is Relaxing Into Your Being, which does have a lot to do with awareness. The Tao of Letting Go has to do with concentration. So that's really about focusing on what are those things in your system that are preventing you from moving on in whatever way. So what can you let go of to help things work better for you? And the Great Stillness sounds very serene to me. So these are, I thought that was interesting. It just happened to fit into those categories very, very nicely. So, and I will say that if you do come across these books, it's just the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more to these things than what are in the books. It's a good place to start, though. The breathing practice that we did is actually in Relaxing Into Your Being. So one of the important practices in Taoist water method meditation is this issue of releasing energetic or qi blockages in your system. So in terms of your health, this has more to do with the energy that runs your physical body. So if you have a pain, it might be caused by something in the energy behind that pain. But as we'll see in a minute, there's other places that this can go. The method for doing this is called the dissolving method. And there's two versions of that, outer dissolving and inner dissolving. Outer dissolving works primarily, as I was just mentioning, with your physical and etheric energy body. So the etheric energy body is the energy that's outside of your physical body, but kind of runs your physicality. You know, most of us would be able to tell very easily the difference between someone who's alive and someone who's dead. You know, there's a different thing about that, or not just a person, but anything. And the way that goes is when you find a blockage in your system, it usually has some sort of shape to it, but it's an energetic shape rather than a physical shape. But it might be something causing pain or some other problem. But ice can melt into water. So basically by using your intention and mind, you would focus on that area and allow it to become from its solid shape into its liquid state, being soft and released. However, water can reform into ice if you're not careful. So the last part of that is to gas. So ice to water, water to gas. So taking that blockage, releasing and relaxing it, and then allowing it to release away from your body. Hence why it's called outer dissolving. And then that energy just reconnects with the energy that runs your system in your etheric body. And there's four conditions over here to the right: strength, tension, contraction, or really anything that doesn't feel quite right. Those are the four things you would look for as you're checking your system for these blockages. Now, inner dissolving is specifically the work of Taoist meditation. And it's the same concept, but the difference is that it's going to end up working with all of your energy bodies, which we'll talk about in a second, not just the physical and etheric bodies. And it's the same general process, ice to water, but rather than water to gas going away from your body, you're going to do to space. And the Taoist concept is that within inside your physical body, there is as much space as there is in the rest of the universe. So quite a bit of space is their general thought on that topic. But the idea is that space equates to freedom from that blockage. So the beginning of it is more or less the same, ice to water, water, and then water to space, but you're going to release it towards the central channel of your body, which is deep inside. If you're familiar with charts of chakras, that's kind of more or less where your central channel is located in your torso. But as I said, the concept is that there's a lot of space there, and just releasing into that emptiness is very useful. So that's the way it works in terms of Taoist meditation. I could do a whole session just on Taoist meditation, but this is about Tai Chi, so I'm not going to go into every possible thing you can do while you're meditating. I did want to pull up the eight energy bodies from the Taoist perspective. So the way this works is each energy body not only goes farther away from your physical body, but also connects to you deeper inside your body. So usually as you're working on awareness, you have to start at the surface, at your skin, and then over time you can work more deeply into your body to the point where you can actually feel into your central channel, into your bone marrow, the deepest things you can think of in your body. So the physical body is pretty obvious, that ends at your skin. The chi or etheric body is a little bit somewhere outside. You know, people who are healthy have a larger etheric body. People who have a lot of charisma tend to have a larger etheric body. You know, there's different things that might affect the size of that. But that's usually, you know, usually we're talking about that in terms of feet away from the body, maybe yards if someone's really, you know, giving it all. But then we get into the emotional body, the mental body, etc. These go far out into space. So the emotional body goes at least as far as our solar system has any effect. Your emotions probably go out that far. So we're talking quite vast distances. So energy that deals with your emotions, energy that deals with your mind and thoughts, psychic energy, something that's been written about a lot in all different traditions, causal or karmic body. So these first six are pretty common in many traditions, especially ancient traditions. The seventh one, the body of individuality, in the Taoist tradition, this is the one where all of the previous ones come together and become the one thing that is you. So in a sense, you could say it's like your entire consciousness or something like that. And that's sort of that's the one that's hard to get to. The other ones, I mean, it's not so easy getting there, but you can do it. This one's tricky. And then the last one, kind of rejoining the body of the Tao, which is essentially everything. That's kind of in Taoist terms, that's the goal of meditation. Not that meditation necessarily has a goal. And in fact, if you put too many goals on your meditation practice, you're probably going to run into more problems reaching that goal than you think. It's one of those things you kind of have to just do and let it go where it goes, I think. That being said, going back to this, the dissolving process can be used. My teacher talks about using dissolving with an agenda. So if there are specific things in your life that you're trying to work on or clear out of your system, he did some research earlier in his life with people who were victims of torture. Now, if you think of that, people have a lot of stuff in their system if that has happened to them. But taking that as a specific agenda and using the dissolving process can be a really valuable way of letting that go. You might still have the memory of it, but you don't necessarily have those energetic points in your body that remember how that feels. So most of us, fortunately, have not experienced that, but you know, we do have things in our life that happen, you know, trouble with family, accidents, disease, whatever. We all have something that can benefit from that. And that's covered a lot. My teacher also talks about the phrase letting go. Just one more thing with the torture. You know, the analogy is, if you're being tortured, would you rather stop being tortured or discuss all the aspects of torture with your torturer, find out why they're doing it, blah, 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 you know, whatever else. Most people would rather just get off the torture table and go. So would you rather just let those things go from your life, or do you want to hold on to them? And unfortunately, humans have this really weird thing where we want to hold on to all of this stuff and keep it with us. So Taoist meditation is a really good way, if you do want to let those things go and have your system be clearer. This is a process for doing that. Okay. And then a little more specifically, you know, most of us think of meditation as the second one here, sitting, and you know, think of someone sitting cross-legged or whatever. But in Taoism, there's five specific modes of doing meditation. The first one is standing, which primarily works best when you're dealing with your physical and qi bodies, because you have the effect of gravity on your system. So you have to constantly make adjustments, get all your body alignments to work well in order for that to work. So you can do more advanced meditation standing, but it's most effective for some of those preliminary things. Sitting is definitely the one where you probably can go the farthest, although, you know, that's up for debate. I mean, none of these are better or worse than the other. Everyone's different, so one person might find that one works the best, someone else might find that something else works the best. Okay. But sitting has that kind of the opposite effect of Tai Chi. So Tai Chi, you're moving and you're looking for stillness. In sitting, you're sitting still, but you're looking for things like the movement of your energy, the movement of your mind. You know, what happens when you make everything in your body still? It doesn't just not everything becomes still like that. You know, the mind keeps talking to you, you might see images, you might feel pains in your system. So a combination of sitting and moving is a very good one, because things that might not get resolved during sitting might get resolved while you're moving, and vice versa. Lying down is hard, because what's the thing that's going to happen when you lie down? Sleep, right? And meditation is definitely not the same thing as sleep. We need them both, but they're not the same thing. And the Taoists are particularly known for this fifth one here, which are interactive and or sexual practices. There's other examples of that, tantric practices from other traditions, for example, too. So, in the West, of course, that's a trickier area to practice and have a class on and that sort of thing. So, but my teacher does address that in his regular Taoist meditation books, and he has actually written a book on Taoist sexual meditation as well, if that's something that you're interested in. So again, it doesn't really matter which ones of these you do, but they have some different things that are easier to do in one or the other. So one thing I like to say is that I like doing my meditation while I'm doing Tai Chi, because then I'm doing my meditation, I'm doing my relaxation, I'm doing my exercise all at the same time. So it's a much more efficient way of doing it sometimes. However, because you're moving, there's definitely some things that make it harder to focus on as you're moving around and having things happen. So as I said, a combination of whichever of these works the best for you is probably the way to go. Okay, I think we're at the last exercise here. Okay, this one I'm gonna actually make you stand up for if you can. Feel free to sit if you can't or don't particularly want to stand up. So sinking the chi to sink the mind. One of the things when you're practicing Tai Chi, you'll see this written a lot. It's in the Tai Chi classics and other works. They talk about always having some of your mind in your lower dantian, which is an energetic center below your navel, right in the center of your body. It's sort of the same area as the second chakra, if you're familiar with chakra systems. But most of our thoughts all are happening up here. So what we're going to do is, I'm going to give you a couple of alignment things just to get you started. We're going to close our eyes, and then just with our mind, we're going to take all that energy that we feel up in here in our brain and let it go, literally go down through our body. At least to our lower dantian, but we'll probably go all the way to the ground tonight. In meditation, just going to the lower dantian is sometimes enough. When you're doing things in more of the Qigong, Neigong realm and Tai Chi, you really want that cleared all the way through, especially because your legs have a very important role in these practices. So just very quickly, in terms of how to stand, have your feet more or less parallel, not too wide. Make sure your knees and elbows are bent a little bit. If you're not used to standing like that, it might be a little bit tricky, but you can kind of just rock on your feet a little bit to find the best spot. In the Taoist concept, if you lock a joint, it just shuts the flow of energy down through it. So we never actually completely close anything in our bodies. And then just generally be relaxed. Put your tongue on the roof of the mouth. That actually completes an energetic circuit, commonly known as the microcosmic orbit, which goes up your back and down your front. And just kind of let your arms hang naturally. Make sure your armpits are open a little bit so your arms don't collapse against your body. Kind of like the way if you hang a jacket on a hanger, the arms are going to kind of hang off to the side a little bit. So go ahead and close your eyes. And if you can do the breathing that you learned earlier, feel free to do that as well. But do remember to breathe. And with your mind, starting right at the top of your head, just sink down into the area of where your brain is located. And again, you might only be able to feel a little bit into your brain, but most of us can feel something happening. We use it a lot, so. And just notice whatever you feel there. And again, using your intention, just takes at least part of that energy from your brain and allow it to just literally sink down to the next level, so like the level of your eyes. Along the way, if you notice anything that doesn't feel quite right, strength, tension, or contraction, feel free to allow that to release and relax as well, relax and release as well if you can. But we're mainly just focusing on getting the energy of our brain sinking down into our body. So from your eye level down through the rest of your head. And all the way around. So feel the back of your body as well as the front and sides. Just allowing everything from your brain to sink down through your head. Down through your neck. Always going in a downward direction. And then when you hit your neck and shoulders, again, allow your mind to sink through your shoulders a little bit. If you have any tension there, see if you can get that to relax. But the main thing is just letting your mind sink down through your system. I know there have been studies that have shown that we actually have more thinking cells not in our brain than in our brain. So think of your entire body as something that can think, that can have attention, intention, that can become aware. So down through your chest, And just focusing on that, however deep inside your body you can focus. Just allowing everything to sink. And down into your belly, down your arms. And if you can feel your lower dantian area, so below your navel, just allow everything from the upper body to kind of sink down into that area. The lower dantian is primarily about all the energies connecting that all the energies that power your physical body connect there. But in terms of meditation, it's also one of the, for lack of a better term, gates to your consciousness. And we're going to just continue sinking our mind below our lower dantian down through our pelvis and legs. Knees, calf, and then down through your ankle into your foot. Always going downwards. And if you have some awareness of your etheric body, also just allow it to sink down below your physical body, beneath your feet. And this is a good way to start the process of becoming more aware of your etheric or chi body, connecting your mind to your energy bodies. And if you ever practice this on your own, you can do it, but always start again at the top of your head and go downwards. And then when you're finished, just allow your eyes to open gently. So keeping that sense of your mind sunk down all the way through your body, but just allow the light to return. So you're starting to regain a sense of the external, but keeping a sense of that internal sinking happening as well. And then we can finish up here. To finish, if you just rub your hands together and just kind of rub it down your face. This helps get stuck energy and blood out of your head. Sometimes this practice can just cause that to happen. So this downward flow of energy is, you can sit down if you're ready, thanks. This downward flow of energy is the direction that water flows. Water always finds the lowest place for it to go. It's the flow of energy that will clear the most things out of your system. One of the challenges with fire method practices, if you should ever encounter those, is that the fire, the upward flow of energy, could potentially be much more dangerous or hard on your system if your system isn't cleared out enough to handle it. So again, I use the analogy of if your electronic device is rated for 100 volts and you put 10,000 volts through it, what's going to happen? So the same thing can happen with your nervous system and the rest of your body. So these downward practices are the most safe and again useful for clearing out of your system. Generally, when you're learning the dissolving process, which we didn't go, this is sort of a part, it's related to that. But as you're doing the dissolving process, you do the same thing. You start at the top of the body and work your way down through, allowing whatever stuck energy to release down out of your body or away from your body. And again, if there's questions about these practices, we can talk about them at the end. So, Tai Chi is moving meditation. As I mentioned earlier, most Tai Chi done in the world is not specifically done as meditation. Although the Nei Gong practices that power Tai Chi were developed by Taoists millennia before Tai Chi was even developed, which are the things that power Tai Chi, But they were developed as preliminary or preparatory and adjunct practices to meditation. So any Qigong system, any Qigong that's around today, originally was a practice related to the meditation tradition of Taoism. Well, Taoism at first, other traditions took that on. There are Buddhist forms of Qigong, there's Confucian forms of Qigong. There's forms of Qigong that were just primarily used by the military. So there's a lot of different versions of Qigong that have come up. But if you're gonna do meditation other than sitting, which is the most common way it's probably done, a couple very important points. Oh, actually, before I do that, let me get just a little history. In the Taoist monastic tradition, there was a tradition of meditating, doing very long Qigong forms. One of the ones that you see around nowadays is called wild goose Qigong, which has endless numbers of movements, and it literally looks like a goose skittering around when I've seen people do it. So what happened is, as Tai Chi became more well-known, Taoists adapted the longer forms of Tai Chi, which most of them were originally, to meditation. However, certain forms of Tai Chi work better than that than others. So the most common style of Tai Chi you see in the world is called Yang style, which is named after the Yang family. It's different than Yin and Yang. It's actually their family name. No members of the Yang family over the hundreds of years that they were around, actually they're still around today, practice or taught meditation. It wasn't an interest of them to do that. One of the best students of the Yang family around the turn of the century, turn of not this last century, but the turn of the 20th century, they changed their name to Wu because of political reasons, but the Wu family, specifically Wu Jinchuan, who's considered one of the founders of the Wu style, was very interested in meditation. And as they developed that form, actually put some things into the form so that it could more easily be used for that purpose. So theoretically, any form of Tai Chi or lots of forms of Qigong could be adapted as a moving meditation practice. But they would need some of these characteristics for that to work well. So the first one's really important, which is that your movements must be practiced sufficiently to have become second nature. So if you're trying to do meditation while you're moving, if you have to think about the movement you're doing, you're probably not gonna go very far with that. You really just have to know what it is. Which is why when you're first practicing this, it's better to maybe just do something that has one or a very small number of movements. And then over time, you can make it go into a larger number of movements. The advantage of something like Tai Chi, where you're constantly changing, if you're talking about meditation, you know, it's gonna give you access to blockages in your system, access to your consciousness, access to all kinds of things from all different perspectives and angles. So sitting, you're kind of in one position. When you're moving and going through all these different postures, it can really give you a different access point. But again, has to be second nature. Starting with simpler movements, probably better. Your breathing has to be very smooth. We did a little bit of breathing practice, so this sort of started that process. So any micro variations can be noticed. One of the reasons for that is because one of the things that happens when you lose that continuity of your mind while you're meditating and space out or something like that, or your mind goes away, is that you can see that in your breath before it happens. So if you can really be aware of your breath, that will help prevent you from hitting those gapping out points as you're meditating. So it gives you, just as we did that counting breath practice, it gives you that baseline of continuity as you're practicing. Meditation takes a lot of energy, so you have to keep your energy strong. So again, so you can be mentally present more than spacing out. You know, one of the things that happened when Zen Buddhism got to Japan, which it comes from what's called Chan Buddhism in China. The Chan Buddhists had a lot of practices. In fact, the Shaolin Temple is known for its martial arts. This fall, I'll be teaching actually this Saturday and this fall I'll be teaching a Qigong system called Dragon and Tiger Medical Qigong, which comes out of the Shaolin Temple. So they had a lot of practices to develop Qi and to help with their meditation. But when Zen Buddhism got to Japan, they'd lost most of that. So they primarily sit, and sit a lot, and sit some more. But what happened is a lot of people, their health it's hard to maintain your health if all you do is sit all the time. You know, there's lots of Western studies about how bad sitting is for you, and what most of our jobs nowadays involve sitting, right? So this ability to have a variety of practices, make sure your body has moved before you do a lot of sitting is very useful. And then as you're doing the whatever movements you're doing, Tai Chi or whatever, become aware of increasingly subtle sensations in the higher energy bodies that are continually arising, changing, and moving. So it isn't just a matter of you're doing these movements. One of the purposes is to open up the ability to feel farther out into those, well, farther out, but also deeper within yourself in those energy bodies. So finding deeper areas of your consciousness to work on. Because what often happens, at least my experience, is that you find something as you're meditating and you think you've dissolved it, but then guess what? Then you find the thing behind that was causing that one to happen. Then you find the one behind that was causing that to happen. So, and those are sometimes not in the same level of energy. It's all, you know, it's all connected and interrelated. That's kind of what I'm talking about in the last one here. Connect with and become aware of the mind stream using the three dantians. The mind stream, that's hard to say, the analogy of a stream or river. And then you throw a leaf into it, or a stick falls into it, or somebody's cell phone is floating down, whatever it is. Those are your thoughts. So the mind stream is the thing that kind of carries your thoughts. So at first, if you're, you know, a lot of meditation traditions talk about, you know, if you have a thought, you know, notice that it's there, but then let it go, or whatever you do, you know, there's different things you can do with that. But the mind stream is the thing behind the thoughts that's carrying them along. And if you can become aware of that mind stream, then the thoughts aren't as big a deal, if that makes sense. I mean, they are a big deal, but it kind of, you can see that there's just this continuum of thought that happens. And then it's not like these things are just showing up. It's kind of just there, and you can become aware of it. So it's a really big one, I think, for that ability to quiet one's thoughts, finding the mind stream, and being able to just follow them. And then getting into some more intermediate, upper-level things, just to kind of talk about where it can go. One thing I did want to mention is that if I go back one slide, my teacher's meditation book called Relaxing Into Your Being. The Chinese title of that is Sung Shin. Shin is usually translated as heart mind, and Sung is usually translated as relaxing. But the idea here is that at this first stage of meditation, the point is to get comfortable with yourself in some way, which is, you know, sounds like it might be easy, but it's maybe not sometimes too. So the heart mind is kind of the place where your thoughts and emotions merge, and it's the place from where thoughts arise. So it's finding that place, not that you found a thought, but you found where the thought comes from. And using intention is one of the ways for helping to become more aware of that. And this is very important moving into higher levels of Taoist meditation, having the awareness of your heart-mind and the ability to use it. And some characteristics of the heart-mind is that it's the center of your awareness. As I mentioned, it's the origin of thought. My teacher says it's at the edge of alchemy. The term alchemy shows up a lot in fire method Taoist books, because they kind of deal with that earlier on in the process. But this is basically it's not just a matter of clearing out the energy, but it's actually a matter of transforming it. So again, I've kind of glimpsed the edge of that, but haven't really gotten into that one. yet. And your mind stream is really a gateway into your deeper consciousness. Now, if you think about Tai Chi, using that as a Taoist meditation, that smoothness of movements is very analogous to the mind stream. In fact, what was that phrase that came up at the beginning? Be still as a mountain, move like a great river. So if you can emulate moving like a great river, that's a good way of starting to understand this concept of the mind stream. Okay. So thank you to everyone here and my two teachers, or my main teacher, Bruce Francis, and his teacher, Liu Hongqia, who was an unusual person. He was a Taoist immortal and hermit who didn't live in the mountains, but lived in the middle of Beijing during the communist era. So the fact that they were able to get together and share this stuff with the wider world is pretty amazing. So I'd like to thank them.
Thank you, Don. It was very interesting.
Good.
But you said it, all the Tai Chi movements are in a circle. And what about that downward motion?
Good point. Probably an easy way to answer that would be have you all seen acupuncture charts? The Chinese medical doctors use. So basically it's all these lines with little dots where they might put the needles, or if you're acupressure, put pressure. The reason they're straight lines is because that's really the only way you can do it in a chart. But the way energy actually moves in your body is in circles and spirals. So even though we're focusing on theoretically linearly going down, it's really, you know, think of like a water going out a drain. That would be a good way of thinking of that. So it isn't really that it's just moving. You know, your intention is moving that way, but the energy is actually going to be going in some kind of circles or spirals.
To stay on the theme of circles, when you're breathing the way you showed tonight, where you're only breathing into your abdomen or lower dantian, how do you get a circle out of that? I know that, you know, if you take that all the way up through your back and everything, then I can see a circle. But if you're only breathing into your dantian, I don't know how you would form the circle.
And it sounds like you're thinking in terms of a physical circle specific. Because really it has to do with the, thinking of three things at once. So I had you breathe into your belly because that's the easiest one to do. But in Taoist breathing, you actually breathe into everywhere in your torso without moving the chest too much. So actually I can breathe, I'm not gonna do it tonight, but I can breathe all the way up to the top of my lungs, which come up here. They're almost up to the top of your shoulders. Most people, in the same way that, you know, most people don't use all of their brain, you know, most people don't use all of their lungs to breathe. So just to clarify what John was saying, eventually in this breathing, you want to get every part of your body moving. So it isn't just about the lungs moving, it's really about everything in your torso moving, so all your internal organs move. And the issue of getting that circularity to happen, it really, in that case, the circularity has more to do with continuity, so that there's no gap in the breath. And the trick, just really briefly, is that as you're getting to the point where you're getting to the end of your inhale, let's say the end of your inhale, before you get to that end, you have to start thinking about the exhale. So they have to overlap a little bit. You know, when you have a thought, there's a time delay. You know, if I'm going to pick up my glass, it's very small, but there's a time delay from when I think I need a drink of water to getting my hand to move. So the same thing happens in the breathing. You have to start that thought a little bit sooner than you think you might have to in order for that to happen. And that happens in physical movements in Tai Chi too. In order to move in a unbroken continuous way, I have to be a little bit, like my mind has to be a little bit ahead of where I'm moving.
Okay. When you defined meditation, you said that it had three aspects, you know, the awareness, concentration, and serenity. And then you gave the examples of the thumb circles and the circular breathing, and then the last, the standing and sinking. Anyway, is this a progression? Are we talking about in terms of getting into this meditation?
That's a good question. The three things is actually John's fault, because I pulled that from his book. Because I was starting to think about this, I was just trying to find something to hang my talk on, because meditation is just too broad a topic, really. But a better answer to your question is that in terms of Taoism, especially, which again is circles. If you think of circles, and the next layer of a circle is a spiral. If you think of all the possible practices you could do at the first, when you're first starting, you might learn breathing practices first. You might learn Tai Chi first. You might learn meditation, some kind of meditation first. You might learn some Qigong system. It doesn't really matter where you start, because what's behind that is what's called the Neigong system, which is what my previous talk was about. So if you want to learn more about that, you can watch that video. But it really, the idea is that it doesn't matter where you jump on the circle, but then eventually you want to get all the way around and learn everything at that level. Then when you finish that level, then you can go up to the next level to learn, say, the next stage or the intermediate practices. But again, it doesn't matter where you jump on that circle, just that you get on somewhere. You know, so there's not a linear progression of how you can learn this material. And in fact, some of my students can verify that their Tai Chi class doesn't seem very linear most of the time.
I thought you did that to confuse us.
I do. Yeah, I do. Yeah. So does that help answer your question? It doesn't necessarily have to be in that progression. But at the end of the day, you want to be able to do all of those things. You know, in Taoism, the idea is that you learn a lot of things, but you end up doing them all simultaneously. And they become one thing, not just all these separate things.
Yes. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Renee.
When we did the sinking your chi portion, we stopped at the feet. Do you take it beyond the feet?
I think I said go below your feet into the etheric body.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
I didn't say it loud enough.
Okay. So
normally you would go into your etheric body.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And then how far do you, in your mind, do you go below your feet?
Sure. Yeah. Because your etheric body is part of you. So
okay.
Yes. Yeah. And again, that was that particular practice. If you're doing meditation and working on the higher energy bodies, you might, your mind will go farther, both away and in. It just depends.
Okay.
But in terms of working with your, and most Qigong versions of standing meditation are going to work with your physical body and your etheric body. So yeah, just ending at the border of your etheric body would be the place.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Would it be correct to say that Tai Chi is the foundation of the martial arts and like the kata and stuff that's done? Is that moving meditation? I know in Aikido there's a lot of circular movements also. So it's
right. Yeah. So in terms of Tai Chi forms, which is kind of what you're asking about, it's a sequence of movements, and once you start moving, you don't stop. And it basically, yes, it's like an encyclopedia of all the martial arts techniques from Tai Chi, from that system of Tai Chi. So in terms of martial arts, yes, it's the foundation of that. Then there's other practices for, in Tai Chi it's called pushing hands. If you're gonna use it for martial arts, you do a partner practice to develop sensitivity. Because Tai Chi is not about physical strength, it's about energetic strength. So you have to learn to use that. And then Tai Chi also has weapons, forms, and things like that too, like other systems do. So.
I have one question through the internet. Is it possible to extend beyond the body of being? For example, that of a stream, a pet, or a flower?
That's probably a better question for my teacher, but my experience with this is that, let me say this in a very specific way. You can use objects in nature to enhance your practice, but I would highly recommend that you ask that object's permission before you do it. Now, something like the ocean, which is a really useful one to use for water method practices, since we're mainly made of water, as in the ocean is this huge, vast amount of water, the ocean will barely notice that you even exist. So you're probably okay with that. But other things like very large trees. I lived in California for a number of years, and practicing by redwoods is a really useful thing. But it's good to check in with that particular tree before you start messing around with its energy. So that might not be exactly what the question was, but yes, you can benefit from the energy of things in nature for your practice.
I just had a question about if you ever have athletes like come to you to kind of bridge the physical side with like the mental side, and kind of how do you take the meditative aspect where it's, you know, slower fluid movement, and then how do you bridge that to like faster, you know, like let's say like basketball or dancing? Because one of the things that you mentioned mm-hmm. was everything's kind of circular, and when I was learning like salsa dancing, my instructor mentioned that all the movements are like circles and semicircles. So how would you like either deconstruct or, you know, start from a slower pace and go to faster paces? Is there any like particular exercises, visualizations, or just like?
Yeah, that's a great question. I know that one of my previous teachers, William C.C. Chen, who's a well-known Tai Chi teacher from New York, writes about this in one of his books. I'm pretty sure that Bruce Francis writes about it in probably his martial arts book. It's kind of a paradox, but the reason that Tai Chi is practiced slowly is because of your nervous system. It gets your nervous system to be opened up and clear. Once that happens, it's much easier to move faster. So generally, as you're practicing, if you can develop the ability to move more slowly, but still be continuous and all the, you know, all the parameters are correct, then you can also equally move that much faster. You know, so and just, you know, to take it just very briefly. So this thumb circle thing, another one is doing, you can do two fingers, which actually gets more of your shoulders moving. But what is that? In terms of martial arts, right? So if you think of the way most fights are depicted in movies, it's usually boom, and then I wait for the other person to hit me, right? But real fights don't go that way. They're like that, right? So if you take this circle to the point of one's fists, you know, you get the idea that, you know, if you're trying to move fast, but your system is not clear enough to allow you to do that, that gives your opponent an opportunity to take advantage of that, let's say. So, but that's the general idea, is if you can practice more slowly to clear out your nervous system, then the ability to move faster, but also in that smooth and circular way, that's how it's designed to work. So.
I have a question from Venezuela. Great talk. Would you make some comments on the idea of mindfulness, which has become popular recently?
I should probably defer to John on that one. He wrote a whole book kind of on that. That's a term that, and I honestly don't know the exact origin of using that specific term, but I know it shows up probably most in relation to Zen meditation, would you say, John? Is that where you've seen it the most?
I think it's...
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
It's There is, I think in the West, it's become almost a non-secular practice, practice of mindfulness, mm-hmm. and I see it taught quite widely. John Kabat-Zinn brought mm-hmm. it really into the mainstream, I think.
Yeah, in terms of Taoist meditation, I guess I would say, well, I guess one way of saying that is, if you think of mindfulness as being present all the time to what you're doing, to how you feel, to everything around you, taking that to a farther degree, you could be meditating all the time.